Why are you laughing?
You have any tokens for the machine down the street?
Welcome to the Why Are You Laughing podcast!
What's going on, everybody? How are you? It's a solo podcast today. Welcome back to the show. I know I haven't put out an episode in a little while. Sorry about that. I've been really busy, as I'm sure you all know. Life has been hectic lately. Just been working a ton and trying to get certain projects together, as I've told people about, and but I wanted to come here on here and talk about part two of what I spoke about in the last podcast, which was, you know, the 16th anniversary of me coming on stage. Now, I think about that to a point where I don't like, you know, when Cal approached me to do the documentary a few years ago, which we're still working on. He's got things going on with his business that, you know, he needs to put food on his family's table, and I get it. So it's like this project is not in a rush, and I am so pleased with that, because if I tried to rush it, it wouldn't be good. But I wanted to come on here and talk to you guys about, you know, just what's going on with me lately. I have songs that I'm working on right now that I could tweak till my head falls off, but I want it to be understood for you guys. Like, I want it to be a product that is translatable through what I've been going through since 2020, you know, which has been, you know, the years that have gone by. You know, we're 6 months away from 2023. Which isn't really a lot of time for the rest of the year, you know? It's like, you think about how fast the last 3 years went, you know, with COVID and stuff. It's like, who would have thought that we'd be doing this? You know, who would have thought that we would have had to go through what we've gone through, you know? In the last 3 years, I've lost a lot. You know, I lost a grandmother. I lost my home. I lost two of my best friends. I had a dear friend just leave, just end our friendship. No explanation, no nothing. And I could sit here and I could sulk in that pain. But there's no reason to. There's reasons to keep going. You know, I talked to Ross today, my best friend. And, you know, we have therapy sessions on the phone together. Like, and I know that sounds funny and kind of strange, but it's like, we would never say that to each other, but we have these conversations that just go deep, and he's the person that doesn't mind listening to me, and I don't mind listening to him. It's because we've been close for so many years. We've been through so much together. I mean, I've known him since 2003. So next year it'll be 20 years that we've been friends. And it's like, it's nuts to think that time goes by so quickly. But it's, I love it, because I could call him up at any time and he'd pick up the phone and talk to me, and vice versa. Whether it's about music, like what's going on, we have very different tastes, but we also have the same moral values. You know, they're the same. And so it was only natural that when we started playing music together and started to figure things out, that we would become brothers, you know. And he had no reason to love me, and I had no reason to love him, but he's my family. So, whenever I make a move these days, it's like I talk to him about it exclusively. I go into detail, you know. There are a lot of times, especially in 2022, where you can't share things with certain people because they will either blab to everybody or they'll judge you and then blab. And then it's like you're a joke to them. So, you know, but with him, I could call him and talk to him about anything crazy. So it's nice to have that. It's nice to have that friendship. It's nice to have that camaraderie. And even after all these years, you know, we just talked about doing another song today. Like, I'm going to visit him for the 4th of July weekend and enjoy 3 days with my friend who I haven't seen in 3 years. So that's what's going on with me lately. As far as, like, the 16th year anniversary of me getting up on stage, he was a part of that. You know, he's always been my Goomba when it comes to, like, what he's doing. Like, he's very articulate in the way he produces music. And it's still a passion of ours, even after all these years. I never in 1,000 years thought that I would be getting up on stage still. I never in 1,000 years thought that I would have 2 bands, multiple songs, you know, multiple records. And it's like, it's crazy to me. It's crazy that time has just not eluded itself from my mind, but it's really, I have no conception of it. I had no conception of it during those days where, you know, the band was going different places and, you know, across New England. And then even with Just Another Day, we only did a few dates together because, you know, we were busy doing so many other things. And then the band eventually broke up because of what happened, but that'll all be in the doc. So that'll be cool to kind of translate that to you guys in a different way. But with those guys, like, at that point, I had just been really in the beginnings of learning how to play guitar successfully, even though, like, I threw myself into a world that I wasn't familiar with, which was playing in front of people. The first time I ever played on stage was, I was in the 7th grade, and there was a project that we had to do in science class. And our science teacher was a huge music guy. And he, you know, he didn't know it, but what he was teaching me was not about science. It was about communication with an audience. And guys, I have no problem telling you this. The project was that you had to rewrite a song about the moon, because we were studying the moon and stuff like that. Don't ask me what the project was. So, you know, I rewrote this song to a different tune. I just rewrote the lyrics, and I tried to perform it with another buddy of mine who had the same class. He had a guitar, I had a guitar. My mother was furious with me. She left work to bring me my guitar, and she's like, I can't believe you took me away from work so that you could do this. So, she was mad at me, but not really. So anyway, I bombed. And when I say bombed, it's like, there's good days and there's bad days. This was a terrible day. I bombed right in front of the girl that I had had a crush on for, like, the last 7 years. You know, I knew her since grade school and then all throughout high school. And, you know, I got the lyrics wrong. I was not loud enough when we were singing. I messed up on the chords. I nosedived into a pile of garbage and just ate it. And guys, this is a stupid thing, but it was the best thing that could have ever happened, because from that moment on, I was determined not to let that happen again. You know, it's like when you make a mistake that's crucial in your mind that, you know, you can't believe it, that you don't ever want to think about it again, you do whatever it takes to move on and to just put that whole situation out of your mind. There are 1,000 stories like that that I have that I'll never talk about on this podcast. You know, unless it's feasible. You know, unless it's like something that I can help somebody with or help them learn from. So, you know, this is one of them. You know, I was determined to learn how to get a stage presence. I was determined to learn how to play notes correctly. You know, I was determined to take the time to learn. And if you can do that, it's all about time. You know, it's practice. It's love of art. It's determination to be the best version of yourself that you can be and not care about what others are doing better than you. You have to be your own version of yourself. And if you continue to work on it, if you continue to arch that craft, like to make it your own and craft it to where it's yours, then you've succeeded. And I'm not talking about money, or I'm not talking about awards, I'm not talking about views, I'm talking about something that we take for granted in society, which is called self-success. This documentary that's coming out, it's not going to be an Academy Award winner. I'm telling you that right now. Because it's an unknown journey of self-success. And believe me, I don't feel this way every day. Even last night, I got some news that I didn't really care about. Like, I didn't care for, I should say. And it got me down. And I should never have even had it on the brain or on my radar that I was going to succeed in this certain thing. But we get our hopes up. Our natural instinct is to be positive. So, you know, it's understandable that we're going to go through these things. So, you know, when it happened, I got really down, and I just kept thinking about it. I even woke up in the middle of the night last night thinking about it, because that's just the type of person I am, to where I analyze things to death, and I'm so sensitive when it comes to, you know, certain subjects that I can't wrap my brain around the fact that I have failed at this or that. But failure is not a bad thing, and I have to work on that. Like, that's just one of my goals for next year, is to, you know, along with getting my own house, you know, slash tiny house, slash van life, or whatever thing that I end up doing, you know, my goal is to just be happy, to be satisfied. And that's a tall order. That's a tall order when we have our bad days. You know, I'm not talking about, like, they gave you Chinese instead of Italian for food. It's like, I'm talking about when you get in your head and you're just having a crap day. And it is relentless. It is relentless. So, you know, when I think about those times when Ross and I were learning how to play music basically together, and then CJ came into the picture and we started playing together as a three-piece, you know, I felt valued as a person, because it was no longer me trying to drive my own scooter. It was all of us trying to work a machine. You know, we all had great ideas. We all had ambition. We all were happy. We loved each other. We had so much fun goofing off and going places and doing things together. And, like, we were just having a blast as kids. We had no rent to pay. We had no bills. We had nothing except for worrying about each other and what we wanted to do for music. So, you know, from that point on, my job as a backup vocalist / guitar player was to help the singer-songwriter, which was CJ, get to where he needed to be, which was, you know, he had gone through a lot. For those who don't know, you know, when we all formed just another day, it was on the spot. Our first show, we played Clem's Cafe in 2009, and I wasn't nervous. Believe it or not, I was not nervous. I was nervous to, like, not have a good time, but I wasn't nervous about screwing up because I had gotten it out of the way 2 years prior. 2 years prior, I was a baby when it came to trying to connect with an audience. Now I have something under my belt to where, as long as I know what I'm doing while I'm up there, the pressure's off me to write. The pressure's off me to sing. You know, I was just happy to be in the presence of something cool, which was me and my friends are getting up in front of people and playing music. And that's, and then, you know, just hanging out after and going to get pizza and doing whatever. It was Rutland. I've spent half my life in Rutland. So, you know, and we goof on it all the time. Ross lives back up north now, and I will call him and be like, hey, where were you at today? He's like, I was in Butland today. It's like, oh, yeah. So, but, you know, it was an education. It was an education to get behind that microphone and to connect with an audience. You know, we brought people in there. It was like, it wasn't, this is a little cafe that had, it was an open mic, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. So, you know, when it happened, it was like, I can't believe that we got this show. It's going to be great. And guys, we went up there and rocked it. The good thing about having a band is you have other musicians around you that can help you carry the load. They help you write. They help you develop confidence. Even if they didn't know it. You know, it was just like, we're all in this together sort of thing. Which happened way before the band, before anything. You know? So, fast forward to the time, you know, Ross eventually graduates or is about to go into his senior year of high school and move down to Florida, and we had a big party for him and played in front of a bunch of people. We must have played in front of 100 people that day at his graduation party. It was like, you know, our dear friend was cooking, and he always had people over. His name was Chris Marcotte. You know, we all miss that guy. He was great. And he was just the type of guy that would have barbecues at his house every weekend. He'd be cooking for everybody. And, you know, it was ridiculous what would go on. I mean, like, what people would be playing volleyball in the other in one corner. There'd be a tent with music and stuff like that. And it was just, I had the time of my life. And to bring that sort of party atmosphere to the stage was what really kicked it into high gear for me when I moved on. You know, I took that whole party element of, hey, we're just having fun in front of our friends. And, you know, we're not even thinking about playing well. We're not even thinking about hitting the right notes. We're not even thinking about connecting with anybody. We're just trying to have a good time. And just be with each other. So, you know, once the band broke up, I had a hard time in the beginning because I lost something that I was proud of. And, you know, people end up going their own way, and that's on them. You can't ever stop that. It's, you know, it's like trying to stop a waterfall. It's inevitable. You know, yeah, it's like a TV show. It's only going to go for so many seasons, and, you know, unless you're South Park or The Simpsons, you know, which for some reason still go after all these years. But, I mean, I was disappointed to the extent that those times came to a close, to where the neighborhood life was gone. We weren't going up to Vermont anymore because people were moving away. And as a kid, you know, I was probably maybe 14, 13, 14, 15, something like that. It was right around the time that I got suspended from middle school. That I was just going through a depression, as a lot of people do when something like that happens. You think it's your fault, you think you did something wrong. But there again, what I didn't know at that point in time was what it was going to fuel me to do, which is the most important thing that you can do, whether you're a musician or not, which is write stuff down. Write stuff down. Write lyrics, write poetry, get a journal. Stuff like that that you put on paper that you can look back and go, wow, I can't believe I was going through that time, is very, very important. Because you don't regret the person that you are, you just learn from what you've done. So after CJ sort of fell off the face of the planet with his, you know, whatever it is he was doing, and, you know, again, I haven't spoken to him since 2012, 2013, right around there. It hurt so much, but again, I was going through something I needed to go through in order to grow as an artist. So at that point in time, the band was done. Ross is gone in Florida. Him and I still keep in contact, obviously. I'm in Keene, like living in Tanglewood, and I just start writing. I start writing, I get into playing electric more, I get into playing bass, and, you know, just doing all these things to get more experience under my belt, because what else did I have? I had nothing. I didn't have a podcast. There was no such thing as podcasting, really, back then. I mean, it was, you had Joe Rogan with the, like, the Ice House Chronicles and stuff like that, but it was the beginning of, you know, it wasn't anything that was on my radar. So I decided that the only way I could get my message across was to start writing and start experimenting with getting on stage again. And I got back on stage in Keene, New Hampshire at Fritz Fry's, which was like the hub for open mics. If you weren't going to Fritz, you weren't going to really see any open mics. I mean, it wasn't really a thing unless they did, like, the music fest or something outside, you know. The place to go that people showed up to was Fritz. And there was, I knew the owners because the girl Jess was dating at the time a guy that worked for my father. And I started, you know, talking to him about it, and then I heard other people talk about it, and then I met Zach Benton. And Zach Benton was one of the sweetest and kindest people to ever run an open mic. I met a lot of guys through the years that really hated their lives getting up and and doing sound and, you know, all this other stuff. They just have an attitude. Zach never once had a bad attitude about people getting up on stage at Fritz and him running the thing. You know, how could he have a bad attitude? He was making $100 for a couple hours of something that he loved himself. He performed. This guy was always performing whenever people didn't show up. He'd do two sets a night sometimes. So, and I had as well. He had me as a backup. So any time that he went up on stage to perform, guess who was working the soundboard? Yours truly. So he taught me how to do the soundboard. We had the same ear. It was incredible to have that trust as a kid and that responsibility. And the people that I brought in there, I want to thank personally because they really made it what it was. I was bringing 20 people in there every Thursday. So, you know, and I would go in there and get my $10 and my $100, or, you know, my food and tips and stuff like that. And I started to build up my confidence again. I started to forget the fact that what I was going through was, you know, it wasn't as big as before. Like, I thought about it less and less each time I decided to get up on stage. Because I was writing my own identity. I wasn't trying to live out the Just Another Day days forever. You know, I was trying to build my own memories. And I was trying to build my own self-success. Because at that time, when you're in a band, you share the success. Even if you're not making money, you share the fact that you're happy. You share the fact that you have a brotherhood, essentially, that you have an extended family. And that was my time in Rutland. I had these extended family members that I keep in contact with to this day. You know? And I would give anything to go back for 10 minutes and relive that. Not even relive being on stage in those days, just relive being with those people that gave me a sense of community. So, you know, I got my confidence up by getting out there and giving it a shot. There's just no other way to do it. If you really, really want to be a musician and be a happy musician, you go out and try it. If you sit in your room and just write, you're not going to get anywhere. You know, that was my mentality back then, was because there wasn't really a lot of social media. And what social media there was, we didn't really know how to use as extensively as we do now. So, for me to give it a try and write my own stuff, it was a hard thing. But the one thing that I did do that I'm proud of myself is, and I can tell you this as an almost 27-year-old man, I'm proud that each time I would go up and play, it wasn't the same songs. I forced myself to do a different set every night. Every single night that I went up, I would try to do different songs. And then as I got older, those songs turned into my songs. I wasn't trying to learn new covers anymore. I was trying to put my own stuff out there. You know, I was trying to make my own sound. You know, which is a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to do when you are not a writer. But I became one because of my circumstances. So when you're going through something, when you're going through something that you don't think you're ever going to get out of, when you dig yourself a hole that you think is just so deep that you're never going to be able to make it out, you're wrong. You're wrong, because it's... I never in a million years thought that I'd be playing in front of 400-something people at a house that is bigger than, you know, it was just craziness. You know, you never think that that's what it's going to be when you start. You never do. But if you don't get up and try, and if you don't try to develop that confidence and that perception of yourself that you're not a loser, you're giving it a chance, then you're never going to make it. You're never going to make it to what self-success really means. So I did it. I proved to myself that I could write. I proved to myself that I had something to say with my experiences. And it could be any experience you want. It doesn't have to be anything so deep. Look at Weezer. Weezer is a bunch of nerds. They wrote a song. They wrote a whole album about, you know, the Blue Album, which is arguably their most famous album. You know, they write songs about, just Dungeons and Dragons. You know, and I'm not saying that specifically, but like those types of things to where it's like, you know, the Sweater Song. Like, Undone. The most random song. You know, what do those lyrics mean? They mean nothing. But if they mean something to you and you can articulate it into that sort of fashion, then you did it, in my mind. To go out there and try something like Andy Kaufman, for instance, one of the most underrated comedians, one of the most underrated crazy comedians of all time, changed the world. That's why they did a movie about him. Elvis Presley, king of rock and roll, obviously changed the perception of time and what people view as music. He moved people. So, you never know who you're going to hit with a song. Trust me when I'm telling you, you could have... Let's see. Let's pretend 50 people in a room, and I'm playing. If nobody comes up to me except for one person and says, hey, listen, that really touched my heart, and you did great, I've succeeded. I've succeeded. And even in my own mind, I could beat myself up into a pulp, or I could say, hey, this is what I need to work on. I remember playing a show, it was like the second to last show with Soda, we were playing the Starlight, and nothing was clicking. I was, like, the sound was off, my guitar was breaking, it was breaking down mechanically, you know, I wasn't singing as well as I could have been. You know, I would beat myself up because I had so much responsibility on my chest when it came to that band. It was like when you bomb, it's so burdensome. But I swallowed my pride. I think about that night only as a learning experience now. And I try not to dwell on it, because there's no reason. There's no reason to dwell on those things. You only think about them and use them to progress yourself. So, and then the last show we ever played, we went back to the Starlight, and we blew the doors off the building. I took that knowledge that, you know, you're going to have some bad days, you're going to have some bad sets, you're going to have some bad songs, you're going to have some bad crowds, but that doesn't matter. What matters is what happens next time. It's like those types of situations are irrelevant. And I still have to convince myself of that, because I could beat myself up, but what will it solve? It's only going to solve, you know, how depressed, it's only going to show me how depressed I really am when it comes to, you know, beating myself up. So, you know, fast forward, I'm doing Fritz every Thursday. Every Thursday till I was about 17. You know, that's 2.5, 3 years of an education. An education that I sorely needed to put yourself out there and to try something. And now, because I had that experience, I put it on myself to continue that legacy of challenging myself. I ain't gonna lie to you guys, getting up on stage after being in a band for 10 years, really, and not having those guys, it was hard. It was really, really hard. You know, it's like I lost a second family. And it gets me sometimes. It gets me up at night. I still think about it. But I'm not going to let it beat me. That's why I'm doing this documentary with Cal Foti. It's because it's important to me to tell someone who has gone through those things that it's going to be all right and that you can succeed. You can have self-success. You know, despite whatever's going on in your life, if you have a way to get an art form out there, put 100% into it. You know, just drill it. Just drill it. I don't care if it's poetry. My friend Taze Jones has impressed me greatly with his self-success. His podcast is so unique and beautiful that he can share other people's work and really shine the light on it. You know, I've never seen somebody do that to such a degree where, you know, it reminds me to keep going myself. I am so proud of that guy. So proud to be his friend. Proud to see his growth. Proud to see his audience. He's just really articulated this art form into his thing. So, it's not out of the realm of possibility for someone to do that. You know, I've learned so much on stage to where I use it in my day-to-day life, where I got off stage when we played that huge show down in Florida, and I could have really dug deep and, you know, beaten myself up on things I didn't do, which I'm prone to do. But I didn't. I looked at that experience as, look at what we've accomplished. Look at how much fun we're having. Look at how much fun the audience is having. You know, it's a big deal to get up and make people feel a certain way when you're on stage. It's a big deal to have talent around you that is real camaraderie. You know, I will never regret meeting my friend Corey Reynolds and taking a chance and saying, hey, why don't we start putting something together? Why not? And him going, yeah, let's do it. it's just the best feeling in life. It's the best stuff to where you have other people that understand you. You have other people that understand you so much to where they want to be a vehicle to match your emotion, to match your strength, to match your self-success. You know? And it's like, just to match the fun that you're having. You know, when Corey and I met, we were so... It seemed like we were different in so many ways, but we really weren't. You know, he's... Let me think. He's got to be 34 years old now, and I'm 27 almost. So, you know, he's older than myself. But the stuff that we have in common and the fun that we've had in our life is unmatched. You know, when Soda was kind of going through its thing right after, let's say the 2-year mark. I'm just shooting in the dark here right now. Like after the 2-year, 3-year mark sort of thing. Corey wanted to focus more on building guitars. And George wanted to focus on his new project called The Great Decay. And that was difficult for me at first. But I understood it. And I understood it because of everything that I had gone through previously. The first band breaking up. Me trying to find my own way. And who am I to stop somebody else from doing that? And now look at Corey. He's making guitars for musicians. He's making these beautiful pieces that he probably never even fathomed would happen. My friend George now has his own beer page with like 1,400 followers or 1,200. I can't remember the number now. And he's got a band, the same guys that he's been playing with for the last like 6-7 years, something like that, I think. If 5-6 years, maybe. I'd have to go back and do some math because I can't remember when they officially got together. But, you know, I don't want to say those disappointments needed to happen, but those changes and things you didn't expect in life need to happen. Because if you stand still in the same spot for 30 years, what is it accomplished? You know? And I'm not trying to say that bands that have been together for that long haven't accomplished things. I'm not saying that, but it's got to feel weird not to break up the monotony once in a while. You know, I think that, you know, even now, my band of 10 years just breaking up, I have put stuff in front of me so that I don't have to feel bad about what's happened. You know, my grandfather, my mother's father, who passed last September, he had a saying. And we would be talking about really serious things, like getting older, and he was not one for conversations that got to that point. But he looked at me, and I was telling him about what happened, and he goes, "That's the breaks of the game, kid." And I thought about that, and I thought about him being 91, I think at the time, 90, 91, and him saying that to me, and I never forgot it. Because no matter what happens, if you don't put positivity in front of you, and if you don't try to make a way for yourself, you're stuck. You're stuck. It's just the effect of what somebody says to you and what he said to me, I needed to hear that. Sometimes we think that we don't need to hear things. It's maybe it's because of age, maybe it's just because of stubbornness, but there's things that people need to hear. I need to hear things. I need to hear the truth being told to me every once in a while. Everybody does. You know? Trying to write this record after a very public parting of the ways is difficult. But it's not going to stop me. I'm not going to be stopped because of, you know, a few negative things that have happened in my life. You can't let that stop you. You got to be positive. And you have to be understanding. And you have to be willing to take the punches and roll with them. Because that's the breaks of the game. That's the breaks of the game. You know, I'm excited for this new chapter in my life, not only with music, but also with, you know, what I want to do as far as, like, future plans, you know, where I'd like to live, and I'd like to maybe do a podcast on the road if I get, you know, if I get the van and end up going traveling and doing that type of stuff. That'd be awesome. And, you know, 2020 in the beginning, I never would have had the guts to do this podcast if what happened didn't happen. Because I gained that experience. I gained the confidence on stage. I gained the confidence behind the mic. So don't sell yourself short. Make it a point to challenge yourself to do something that maybe you didn't think that you could do before. Maybe it's playing the harmonica. Maybe it's running a marathon. You know? I never saw my grandmother work out so much like when she got into this place called Bentley Commons. When she really couldn't take care of herself anymore, they put her in this apartment. I say take care of herself anymore. She took care of herself very well. She was a tough farm girl from way, way back, so she could take care of herself. And I don't mean, like, feeble. It's like she got into Bentley Commons, and she was exercising every 3 days. And she really put her heart... It was a short time, but when she put her heart into it, you know, it was impressive. She was walking without, you know, losing breath every 3 feet. She was doing all this stuff, and it made me think that there's no reason for somebody not to keep trying, even though they're older, even though they've gone through a lot. You know, she lost a husband and 2 children. How would you feel? Think about that for a second. Like, how would you feel if something like that happened to you? Would you be able to pick up your balls and keep going? It's not a simple task. It's not simple. But again, that's the breaks of the game. So I learned not only from my band members about what it's like to connect with somebody on stage, but I learned from a lot of other people what it's like to laugh on stage, to have fun, to be yourself. I learned how to be myself on stage rather than be what other people wanted me to be. So if you guys get anything out of this podcast, and I hope that you do, and I hope this comes through in the documentary, is self-success is more important than somebody else telling you you're successful. Self-success is what you need when nobody's got their eyes on you. You know, and I'm telling you this as someone who suffers from depression. Probably the first time I've said that out loud or on a show. As somebody who has gone through more in these last few years than I ever thought would happen. It's not an easy journey to pick yourself back up. But that's the breaks of the game. And I can't wait for future projects now. I can't wait for my music to come out. I cannot wait for you guys to hear what I've been doing. I'm going to be recording soon. I want to get all my eggs in the basket before I go in. Because it's like, I don't want it to be polished. I just want it to be translated the right way. So I hope that it is. And I don't know. I'd like to maybe do something that, like, if Cal starts his podcast up again, I would like to go on Brews and do that thing where he plays the song and maybe we can talk about it and have a couple beers and stuff like that, because that is a really cool idea. Cal, if you're listening, your show's phenomenal, brother, and you should keep going. So I'm hoping that that translates well. You know, the last thing I think I want to talk about is when I started writing Belief in the middle of, you know, the band, it's like we were kind of on a little break and stuff. That was a challenge that I didn't think was going to be a problem. Like, for the first time ever, I was excited to do something on my own and to put something out there and to prove it to myself. And now I'm doing that again. You know, it may not be the best, but it's important to have those little moments in time to where you say, I really felt good about myself there. You know, it's like when you get married, it's supposedly supposed to be the best day of your life. You know, alongside of many other things that we do as humans. And I want these songs to be one of them. I want these songs to be one of those moments to where I can look back and say, wow, I really did something. You know? And I hope you guys understand that, like, this is not meant to be a pity party. This is not meant to be ego or anything that is trying to make anybody feel bad. I'm just trying to relate my situation from the last 16 years has taught me a lot. I didn't get that fly. Darn it. It's taught me everything. You know, from exercising. If you want to get on stage, you better be in some shape. Let me tell you. Like, it was, I didn't understand that the first couple of times, and you can see me in photos on stage. Sometimes I look like a blob of goo, and I'm sweating, and you see all 12 of my chins. So it's like those types of situations. It's like, you know, you got to take care of yourself. That's the other thing it taught me, was that, you know, you don't have to stay up till 1-2 in the morning every day in order to be a successful musician. You don't have to constantly be trying to make other people happy. Spending that time alone off stage, it gives you a chance to recoup and to get geared up for the next time. To get geared up for getting on stage again. So, you know, that's a good message too about this podcast, is to take care of your mental health, take care of your physical health and take care of yourself. Like, I don't want to say emotionally. I suppose that goes along with your mental health, but take care of your image. Maintain your attributes. You know, don't go to the negative when you get on stage. When you get on stage, just be in the moment. And when you're in the moment, you're connecting with an audience. And even if you make a mistake, it's gonna happen, guys. Trust me when I'm telling you. It's happened to me 1,000 times. Whether a string breaks, whether you sing badly. You know, I've told this story on the show a few times, but we were performing at Beaver Street years ago. And everything that could have happened that was bad happened. You know, the Subby's Tom was rolling down the hill in the middle of our set. You just hear it. Tring, 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 just like and, you know, me, I was like, I couldn't breathe. I was singing terribly. Sully forgot the bass amp. We had to play it out of this little dinky amplifier. You know, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. But at the end of the day, if you don't have those stories, if you don't have those experiences, you're not going to learn. You're not going to learn, and you're not going to be successful. I left that stage mentally thinking, oh my gosh, what just happened? But then you know what? We all went to Five Guys, ate burgers, and just enjoyed each other's company. You know, I miss Marlboro for that reason. It was because after every show, no matter if it was good or bad, and trust me, I've had some dog water performances to where I didn't want to see anybody. But the fact that people come up to you and just enjoy you for you, it gives you the confidence to get back up on stage again. And that's why I always had people over after the shows and we'd party and do whatever. And it was a glorious time. It was a short time, but it was a glorious time. So, you know, guys, don't give up. If you're listening to this podcast and you're like, what the heck is Sammy talking about? You know what I'm talking about? This life goes by quick. You know, we're in a world where people are angry. They're frustrated with situations in life. And I understand. Because I get that way too. But to not try and to not put yourself out there is even a bigger failure than that. Than being disappointed with your situation. So I'm pleased that I've had these 16 years. Good or bad, it happened. You know, good or bad, that's the breaks of the game. And it trust me, 99% of it, I've always had fun. 99% of the time, I was always having a blast. Because I learned so much from, especially those shows with the bands that, you know, helped us. And vice versa, you know, who we opened for all those years. That was a really special time. That was a camaraderie that will never be matched again. You know? So, I think more importantly than anything is that self-success isn't measured by the amount of times you bomb, but it's measured by the amount of fun that you can have. and really, really looking at what you did right and being proud of yourself for accomplishing that. Being proud that you made your choices and that you took a chance. And that's it, and that's that, bro. It's there's really nothing left I could say about it other than I've enjoyed my time. I've enjoyed putting the time in to the craft. So, and I think probably we'll do a 20th anniversary one. That's the next time you guys will hear me yapping my mouth off about stage time and stuff like that. So, I don't have any dates right now. But I've been going back and forth about planning Hoodstock, to be honest. I think I might do something like in the first week of August. So, if you guys are interested in that, you know, hit me up on Instagram or any other social media platform that I'm on at the Why You Laughing Podcast, capital YRU. The letters YRU, not like the actual words. People are getting confused by that. I want to explain something. The podcast is the Why Are You Laughing Podcast. Why are you? So, if you make it over here, thanks. Anyway, so yeah, happy anniversary. I can't really think of anything else. I'm going to be going into the studio. I have a new song that I'm going to put on the record that I put on my TikTok at the Clappinator, if you can find me. Clappinator 95? What the heck is my TikTok thing? Sometimes I get lost and I gotta go back and look. You guys ever do that? I've had so many things happen to me, it's like I can't ever keep track of what I'm doing. Let's see here. Yep, at the Clappinator 95. So I'll be on there. Anyway. Alright, guys. Thank you so very much for tuning in. This has been a Why Are You Laughing Podcast, and we are clear.